A reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 4th canto, 12th chapter, verses 9 to 31. Tasya pritena manasa tangat vaira vidastata vashitan tartate sapi sapuram patyapadita. The son of Idavida, Lord Kuvera, was very pleased, and happily he gave Dhruva Maharaj the benediction he wanted. Thereafter, he disappeared from Dhruva's presence, and Dhruva Maharaj returned to his capital city. So yesterday, we heard Sayambhuva Manu's final instructions to Dhruva. Face the Lord, and you will see this material world is all flickering. All these differences are just temporary. As Krishna's servant, when you know you're Krishna's servant, then you will forget this illusion of I and my. Then he said, control your anger, for anger is the foremost enemy on the path of spiritual realization. And finally, he said, your actions have displeased Kuvera and Lord Shiva, his brother. So now you must go and appease them. So then Dhruva Maharaj stopped fighting. He controlled his anger. And he went to offer obeisances to Kuvera, the Lord of Wealth. So Kuvera also preached to him that it's this I and my, this is illusory. The Yakshas didn't kill your brother and you didn't kill them. So therefore you should know that this is all temporary and actually you're sinless. Although Dhruva Maharaj was thinking he was very sinful, he said, no, you are sinless. Because after all, it's only time which is killing everyone, and you are not to blame. So then finally, Kuvera, the Lord of Wealth, came before Dhruva Maharaj, who was desiring immense wealth, who had desired, and he asked, take any benediction from me. I'm ready to give you whatever you want. So what did Dhruva Maharaj ask for? Yes, Madhu Dipuri. Constant remembrance of the Lord, Vanamala. Firm faith and constant remembrance of Lord Krishna. Now, in the purport, Srila Prabhupada asks a question. Why did Dhruva Maharaj, who is a great pure devotee, liberated soul, take a benediction from a demigod? Why does he need to go to the demigods? He could just ask Krishna. He met Krishna face to face. So why did he actually take this benediction? What is the Shuka? Right, the gopis, the same.
So a devotee can take a benediction from everyone as long as it is conducive for his Krishna.
So a devotee can take benediction from anyone as long as it's conducive for Krishna's service. So Prabhupada says in the purport, exactly the same thing that you said, so we won't read it, because you already said it. Saves us time. The gopis, for example, worship Katyayani. So Prabhupada says, a Vaishnava is not interested in asking any benediction from the demigods, nor is he interested in asking benedictions from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It is said in the Bhagavatam that liberation can be offered by the Supreme Person, but even if a pure devotee is offered liberation by the Supreme Lord, he refuses to accept it. Why would he refuse liberation? Salokya sharsti samipya sarupyaikatvam apyuta diyamanam nagrinanti. Because why? Vina matsevanam. Without devotional service to Krishna, what's the use of liberation? So this is the answer. Dhruva Maharaj did not ask Kuvera for transference to the spiritual world, which is called liberation. He simply asked that wherever he would remain, whether in the spiritual or material world, he would always remember the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So actually, Prabhupada explained yesterday that this benediction is higher than liberation. Remembering Krishna is even better than being liberated from this material world. Because if you're liberated, what might happen? Yes, Prashanta.
I might return.
You might return. What's even worse than returning? What's that? Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking. Nan Vrindavan? Might get stuck in the Brahman for who knows how long. It's worse than being in this material world, isn't it? For a devotee.
Could you say that again?
Oh, could you say that again for the camera?
Might get stuck there.
In the Brahman. Okay. So here, Prabhupada at the end says, a Vaishnava is always respectful to everyone. So when Kuvera offered him a benediction, he did not refuse it. He didn't say, oh, you're just a demigod. Why should I take something? I don't need anything from you. Why should I take anything? I have Krishna. Exactly. No, he accepted, and he was very humble also. But he wanted something which would be favorable to his advancement in Krishna consciousness. So, as we discussed yesterday, he phrased his question in such a way that he would get what he actually wanted, and he was even afraid that Kuvera might stop him from getting what he wanted. So therefore, he particularly asked for that thing. But please let me remember Krishna. He was afraid maybe Kuvera would help him forget Krishna. But actually, one time in Japan, Srila Prabhupada was giving a class in Bhagavad Gita, 16th chapter, and one of the Japanese people asked Prabhupada, did you ever meet the demigods? And Srila Prabhupada said, I don't need to go to the demigods. Why should I go there? I know the president. If I know the emperor of your Japan, then why should I ask one of the policemen for help? I can just go directly to the emperor. Why should I ask a manager? So Srila Prabhupada said, if I know Krishna, why should I go to the demigods? He said, they may come to me because I am known to Krishna. So the demigods may come and ask me for some favors because I'm known to Krishna. Oh, this was Srila Prabhupada. And he said, actually, I don't even need to go to Krishna to ask for anything. He gives me whatever I need. So verse 10. As long as he remained at home, Dhruva Maharaj performed many great ceremonial sacrifices in order to please the emperor of all sacrifices, the supreme enjoyer of all sacrifices. I got emperor in my mind. Enjoyer of all sacrifices, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Prescribed ceremonial sacrifices are especially meant to please Lord Vishnu, who is the objective of all such sacrifices and who awards the resultant benedictions. So here, purport, paragraph 3. Dhruva Maharaj, as an ideal king, practically emptied his treasury by giving charity. A king is not meant simply to realize taxes from the citizens and accumulate wealth to spend in sense gratification. World monarchy has failed ever since kings began to satisfy their personal senses with the taxes accumulated from the citizens. So there's a very nice analogy in 10th canto that explains how if a king empties his treasury by giving charity, does anybody know that analogy? Yes, Madhavan Puri. Yes, the cloud. Yes, the sun. The sun sucks up the water, evaporates the water, returns it
in the form of rain.
Right. Right. The king gives in times of need. So this verse is 10:20. 10th canto, 20th chapter, verses 5 and 6. I'll just sing that verse for you. Ashtama san nipitam ya umya sharamayam vasa sagavi moktu mareve hajanya kalagate. With its rays, the sun had for 8 months drunk up the earth's wealth in the form of water. Now that the proper time had arrived, the sun began releasing its accumulated wealth. So Prabhupada says, similarly, taxes collected by the king, they should be returned in the form of educational work, sanitation work, public work, and all these things, welfare. There's another, in the next verse, it describes even further, flashing with lightning, great clouds were shaken and swept about by fierce winds. Just like merciful persons, the clouds gave their lives for the pleasure of this world. So what happens to a cloud after it pours down all its water? The cloud is finished because its body is made of water. So after it gives all its water, then the cloud actually will dissipate. So this is compared to the compassionate, like a rich man or a king who in times of need empties his whole treasury. So this was Dhruva Maharaj. And this was Prithu Maharaj, is the same. All the kings, they are such great examples of this type of charity. And another way of understanding it is that the cloud, he's so munificent that he doesn't care if you need the water or if you don't need the water. He pours on the ocean, he pours on the rocks. So a charitable man doesn't discriminate. He simply gives in charity open-handedly. So this is the analogy, comparison with Dhruva Maharaj. Verse 11. So what was he thinking while he was performing his kingly duties? Verse 11. Sarvatmanya chate sarve jivalkam bhaktimut bahan tadashat manibhuteshu tamevavastitam vibham. Dhruva Maharaj rendered devotional service unto the Supreme, the reservoir of everything, with unrelenting force. While carrying out his devotional service to the Lord, he could see that everything is situated in him only, and he is situated in all living entities. The Lord is called Achyuta because he never fails in his prime duty to give protection to his devotees. So at the end of this purport, Srila Prabhupada explains, what is the vision of a Mahabhagavat? So at the end of the purport, he sees everything others see, but instead of seeing merely the trees, the mountains, the cities, or the sky, he sees only his worshipable Supreme Personality of Godhead in everything, because everything is resting in him only. This is the vision of the Mahabhagavat. In summary, a Mahabhagavat, a highly elevated, pure devotee, sees the Lord everywhere as well as within the heart of everyone. This is possible for devotees who have developed elevated devotional service to the Lord. As stated in Brahma Samhita, Premanjana Charita Bhakti Vilochanena, only those who have smeared their eyes with the ointment of love of Godhead can see everywhere the Supreme Lord face to face. It is not possible by imagination or so-called meditation. So sometimes devotees try to imagine seeing the Lord in the trees and the rocks and everyone's heart, but it's not possible. It's only by realization. So there is a verse in CC which says that. Stavar jangam deke na deke ta murti sarvata hoi nija ishtadeva smurti. So everywhere, he doesn't see the trees and the rocks moving and not moving. He sees everywhere his worshipable deity. So my question to you is this. What is the practical application of this vision, of having this vision? And Srila Prabhupada actually explained this in one lecture, no, morning walk actually, that what is the practical application of having this vision of a Mahabhagavat? Yes, Prashanta.
We should treat the people as souls and therefore always work for their enlightenment.
Treat the people as souls and therefore always work for their enlightenment. Yes, you've got the answer, but he says it in a different way. He's looking at it in a different way. Vanamali. Okay, yes, you're getting closer. Actually, that's it. He said that he sees everything in relation to the Lord, therefore it should be used in the Lord's service. And this includes people. This includes people. Yes. Right. That's exactly what Prashanta said. Same thing. Sees everybody as soul. So Prabhupada says, therefore, if you see that everything is related to Krishna, you see these people, they're Krishna's energy, but they're wasting their lives. So the preacher, Prabhupada says, the Mahabhagavat, he doesn't like to see anything wasted or misused. So these people are wasted. Krishna's energy is being wasted. He says, why are we after so many rascals? He says, because their life is being misused. So he doesn't like to see anything of Krishna's being misused, including people's lives. So he said, so let us give some enlightenment. That is our mission. Utilize everything for Krishna. Yes, Sankirtan Das.
How is Maharaj's service different from... It seems like he's doing two kinds of devotional service.
Two kinds of devotional service?
I mean, Prabhupada says not only did Guru Maharaj perform any sacrifice, but...
it's true. Yes. Sacrifice is like his duty as a king. Like Varnashram.
Yeah.
Dovetailing Varnashram for Krishna is
that
one.
Is
yes. Devotional service.
Right.
He had to be a king for Krishna.
Yeah.
And to be a king, you have to perform sacrifices. So he gave his life for Krishna. Yes. Two things. Okay, so you would say that verse 11 is saying one thing. Yeah, actually, if you read the purport of verse 11, Prabhupada says that. Not only did Dhruva Maharaj perform many sacrifices, but he carried on his transcendental occupation of engagement in devotional service of the Lord. So it's like two things. That was his like material side. He had to be a king, he had to do these things. But also he did his seva. Here, and he goes on, that's explained in that purport to verse 11. Although Dhruva Maharaj performed many sacrifices in order to be an exemplary king, he was constantly engaged in devotional service. So he was carrying on the external, because that was given to him. The Lord said, you will rule the kingdom. That was given, a service given to him by the Lord. And so similarly, as devotees, sometimes we have some material duties, sometimes we have spiritual duties. So even though we have our material duties, still we don't forget Krishna, and we continue. Just like the housewife who has a paramour. She has the husband at home, but then she's always thinking of when she's going to meet her paramour. So similarly, we devotees in this world, we have so many material duties. But actually, our heart should be with Krishna. Our heart may not be so much in... Although we do them as a service for Krishna at the same time. Two sadharmas. They should parallel. Yes. Yes. If the material swadharma obstructs the spiritual, then it should be given up. So that's the purport, I think, to 9:30, I believe. 9th chapter, verse 30. Also two sadharmas in second. Second chapter, it's there. Fourth chapter. Okay, so let's go on to verse 12. Verse 12. Tameva shila sampanam ramanyam dinavatsalam guptaram tamasetunam minirempitam puja. So these are the qualities of a perfect king that we see here in Dhruva Maharaj. First thing is tameva shila sampanam. Dhruva Maharaj was endowed with all godly qualities. Brahmanyam, he was very respectful to devotees of the Supreme Lord. Dinavatsalam, very kind to the poor and innocent. Dharma goptaram dharma setunam, he protected religious principles. Menire pitaram bhajaha, with all these qualifications, he was considered to be the direct father of all the citizens. So just imagine if the king is your father. And everybody felt like that. So such was actual monarchy, that all of the citizens felt that this king is my father. He's just like my father. So let's see the purport, paragraph 2. One word is very significant in this connection, Brahmanyam. Dhruva Maharaj was very devoted to the Brahmanas who engage in the study of the Vedas and thereby know the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They are always busy propagating Krishna consciousness. So these are the Brahmins who are always busy propagating Krishna consciousness, quality of a Brahmin. The state should be very respectful to societies that distribute God consciousness all over the world. But unfortunately, at the present moment, there is no state or government support given to such movements. As for good qualities, it is very difficult to find anyone in state administration with any good qualities. Prabhupada must have had some experience here. The administrators simply sit in their administrative posts and say no to every request, as if they were paid to say no to the citizens. So we have experience like that too. That actually, instead of helping, they are trying to hinder our service. If you want to get anything from an administrator, then you can't go with empty pockets. If you go with full pockets, then it'll be quick. And if you go with empty pockets, it may not happen. And that's the sad state of affairs. In India, I think it's other places. I don't know. In India, for sure. Red tape. And no, not only red tape. You need money to do anything. But there are, actually, I did meet one very nice person, but very high up. Very high up in the government. The ordinary people are very difficult to deal with. So verse 13. This is an interesting verse. Dhruva Maharaj ruled over this planet for 36,000 years. He diminished the reactions of pious activities by enjoyment. And by practicing austerities, he diminished inauspicious reactions. So, how to diminish the reactions to our pious activities? Shall we enjoy them? Like Dhruva Maharaj? Yes. No. Not a good idea, huh? We should chant Hare Krishna. Yes. Offer everything to Krishna. What happens if you do get something that's very nice? Give it? Give it to Krishna. Yes.
Use it for the sound system.
Sing louder. Okay? Chant Hare Krishna louder. Purport. There are two kinds of activities, namely pious and impious. By executing pious activities, one can gain facilities for higher material enjoyment. But due to impious activities, one has to undergo severe distress. A devotee, however, is not interested in enjoyment or affected by distress. When he's prosperous, he knows, I'm diminishing the results of my pious activities. And when he's in distress, he knows, I am diminishing the reactions of my impious activities. A devotee is not concerned with enjoyment or distress. He simply desires to execute devotional service. So what austerities do we perform to diminish the reactions to our impious activities?
Fasting.
What's that?
Fasting.
Okay. Ekadashi Vrat. Yes. Four regative principles. Yes, Prabhupada will say, actually that's what Prabhupada says. You've been reading the purport nicely. Prabhupada says Ekadashi and following the four regative principles. These are our austerities. It is said in Srimad Bhagavatam, devotional service should be apratihata, unchecked by material conditions of happiness or distress. The devotee undergoes processes of austerity such as observing Ekadashi, similar other fasting days, etc., etc. Thus he becomes purified from the reactions of his past impious life, and because he engages in devotional service, which is the most pious activity, he enjoys life without separate endeavor. So this is the... These quotes I have here are the ones that were answering Parvati's question. Parvati's here, yeah. You had a question in a previous class. So here are the quotes. This is explaining what happens to a neophyte devotee, because we feel distress sometimes. We experience distress. And we're affected by it too. So the problem is that we're neophyte devotees sometimes here. So Prabhupada explains why we are feeling it. What is the problem with devotees who actually suffer? Why do we feel the suffering? What's the problem? Identifying with the body. Mm-hmm. Anything else? There's a couple of analogies that explain this. Why is it coming to us also? Why is it... Yeah, the fan? Yes? Okay. So when the king's servant takes some green mangoes, he treats them with chemical or puts them in the sun so they become ripe. So similarly, we are all green mangoes who have to become ripe in Krishna's service. Now the other example was pulling. If a fan is going, our karma is going, and you pull out the plug, turn off the fan, then it still goes for some time. And that is the reactions of our past. Of course, we already discussed that devotee doesn't get reactions, but it looks like we're getting reactions to our past karma. Yes? Right. Exactly. Yeah, so Krishna, that's a nice point, that Krishna sometimes wants to make you into something much greater than you are. So to do that, there are certain processes of ripening the mango. So one time a devotee, Jivikra Maharaj, asked Prabhupada about this. He says, we have this feeling that we're very fallen. Prabhupada says, that is illusion. You're fallen means you have some desires except service of Krishna. So the conclusion is, if you keep yourself in Krishna's service, there's no question of falling down and no question of maya. You see? And then the devotee said, but even then, the body is affected by the modes. We're experiencing desires. Prabhupada said, you are not experiencing. Your body is experiencing. You are feeling cold due to this body. You are not feeling cold. It's very hard to realize. And the devotee says, but I think I'm feeling cold. Prabhupada said, you are thinking. That is illusion. So the devotee says, oh yes, so I should rise above that. Then Prabhupada said, yes, but not artificially. But don't think that you can just think you're out of it. He says, this is a lecture in Tokyo on Bhagavatam 291, Tokyo 1972. So Bhrija and Prabhu must have been there. Maybe even he asked these questions, who knows? Yes. So Prabhupada says, you have to gradually rise to the platform. Prabhupada says, just like when you are feverish, actually you're healthy, but the fever has come. So in the feverish condition, you're thinking, I'm feverish. But this condition will not stay. You will become healthy. So don't be disturbed with the feverish condition. Go on with your duty and don't misidentify. Now I've become feverish. Everything's finished. So sometimes we have our calamities and we think everything's finished. No, I'm finished. No, you're not finished. That is external. It will come and it will go. Where does Krishna say that? It will come. Matta sparshast konteya shitoshnas dukaya. Yes. I think your Guru Maharaj, Mahavishnu Swami, also said that one time to us, that somebody asked, what are you doing for your health? And he says, anyway, this disease, it comes, it will go. Just like it now I have it, it will also go. It's temporary. And so these are the realizations of the pure devotees. So Prabhupada said, sometimes it's hot, sometimes it's cold, but don't be absorbed in that thought, like your topic of conversation for many days or whatever. That was his point. Yes. Okay, so just by thinking that it's temporary, it helps. It helps actually to go through that. So I have a little section here, how the gopis reduced their pious and impious activities. These are the ones who did not get to go to the Rasa dance. They were stopped from, prevented from going to the Rasa dance. This is 10:29, verses 10 and 11. So for those gopis who could not go to see Krishna, intolerable separation from their beloved caused intense agony that burned away all impious karma. So from separation, all their impious karma was burned up. By meditating upon Krishna, they realized his embrace, and the ecstasy they then felt exhausted their material piety. So then by meditating on Krishna, and he came to them in their meditation, he embraced them, all their reactions to good activities. So then in the purport, I'll just read a little bit of it. This is by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary. Because of their intolerable separation from their beloved, the gopis felt terrible agony, by which they caused all inauspicious things to tremble. In other words, when people in general hear of the gopis' extreme agony in separation from Krishna, they abandon thousands of inauspicious things. So if you just hear about this feeling of separation of gopis, then we also can become free from impious reactions. Thousands. Millions. Then the next thing is, when the gopis meditated on Achyuta, he came, personally came to them, and they experienced great joy by embracing him. The gopis experienced great joy by exhibiting personal characteristics and a sense of identification appropriate to such love. So then Vishnu Chakravarti says, the implication is that when other persons see how happy the gopis became upon meeting Krishna, when he manifested himself directly before them, these other persons feel thousands of so-called auspicious objects are insignificant by comparison, including all the sense gratification found in millions of universes and even the super-sensory pleasure of Brahmananda. So here it says, anyone can get rid of all reactions of his past activities, both sinful and pious, by hearing of the gopis' distress and joy. So this is another way, get rid of pious and impious activities. This is 10:29, verses 10 to 11. It's a very extensive purport. I just picked up a few parts of it. But it's very nice. Verse 14. The self-controlled great soul, Dhruva Maharaj, thus passed many, many years favorably executing three kinds of worldly activities, namely religiosity, economic development, and satisfaction of all material desires. Thereafter, he handed over the charge of the royal throne to his son. So, Trivarga is dharma, artha, and kama. He didn't practice liberation. Of course, he did in one sense, because he was doing much more than liberation, devotional service. But as a king, he had to do dharma, artha, and kama. Yes. So now it's moksha. Now that he gave up the kingdom, now he's going for moksha. Externally. Actually, he's already liberated. He's a liberated soul. But according to the Varnashram, then you go through certain stages. So if you're a king, then you have to practice dharma, artha, and kama. And then at the end, you go for moksha when you're 50 years old. So here, Prabhupada, paragraph 2, picks up a Sanskrit word, avichalendriya, which means he was not disturbed by the agitation of the senses, nor was his sensory power diminished, although in years he was a very old man, 36,000 years old. But his senses remained very young. He was self-controlled. He performed his duties perfectly according to the materialistic way. That is the way of behavior of great devotees. Interesting, huh? Great devotees perform their duties according to the materialistic way. Interesting. Then who is the example? Srila Raghunath Das Goswami was the son of a very rich man, although he had no interest in enjoying material happiness. In fact, he was running away from home continuously. But then Lord Chaitanya said, don't be crazy. Just go home. And then here is his instructions. From within, keep yourself and your mind completely aloof. But externally, execute the material duties just as they need to be done. So this only can be attained by devotees. So remember, Raghunath Das, when he went back home, his uncles were in trouble with the government. And then he got them out of trouble. He was so expert. Very expert. So that's what Lord Chaitanya was instructing him to do. Verse 15. Srila Dhruva Maharaj realized that this cosmic manifestation bewilders living entities like a dream or phantasmagoria, because it is a creation of the illusory external energy of the Supreme Lord. Purport. In the deep forest, it sometimes appears there are big palaces and nice cities. That is technically called Gandharva Nagara. Similarly, in dreams also, we create many false things out of imagination. A self-realized person or devotee knows well that this material cosmic manifestation is a temporary, illusory representation appearing to be truth. What is that in the... There is in the first canto, second verse, yes? Something like that, like a mirage. It appears to be truth, but actually... First verse? It's the first verse, right. First verse. Tejo vari miram yata vinimaya yata tisago misha. It's misha, though it's false. It's illusion, it appears to be truth. I mean, it's not false, but it's temporary. But in a sense, it is like an imagination. Lancing of water, water seen in fire, or like a mirage in the desert. Or here, there's another thing. I never saw, did anybody see this? Gandharvanagara in the forest? Because we haven't been much in the forest. Probably if you go and meditate for a few years in the forest, you might see this. But nobody's there, you haven't seen anybody for 2 years. And then you start seeing things here. Behind this shadow creation, there is reality, the spiritual world. The devotee is interested in the spiritual world, not its shadow. Since he has realization of the supreme truth, the devotee is not interested in this temporary shadow of truth. This is confirmed Bhagavad Gita, Param Drishtva Divartite. And verse 16, Thus Dhruva Maharaj at the end left his kingdom, which extended all over the earth and was bounded by the great oceans. He considered his body, his wives, his children, his friends, his army, his rich treasury, his very comfortable palaces, and his many enjoyable pleasure grounds to be creations of the illusory energy. If we had even one of these things, it would be probably hard to give up. If we had a palace, or if we had all these things, an army, a treasury. Thus, in due course of time, he retired to the forest in the Himalayas, known as Badri Kashyama. So, I'll ask you a question from the purport. Let's see who read the purport. What do we learn from Dhruva Maharaj? What is the lesson, the big, big lesson? Yes, Prashanta. Doesn't matter what motivation you start your service with. You will become a pure devotee in the end. Prabhupada says that. Somehow or other, if one becomes Krishna conscious, it does not matter what his motivation is in the beginning. He will eventually realize the real truth by the grace of the Lord. So this gives us great hope. If Dhruva Maharaj can do it, then we can do it. And that's what Srila Prabhupada is saying. He says, even if one completes only a minute percentage of devotional service and then falls down from his immature position, he is better than a person who fully engages in fruitive activities of this material world. So that's why Prabhupada said devotees are better than kings. Even a fallen devotee is better than a king of this world. Can you imagine that? So there's a nice verse. What verses actually support this? Svapamapyasya dharmasya chayate mahatobaya. So that's 1:5:17. One who has forsaken his material occupations to engage in devotional service of the Lord may sometimes fall down while in an immature stage, yet there is no danger of his being unsuccessful. Anybody had that experience? Of in your immature stage, making some mistakes, falling down. On the other hand, a non-devotee, though fully engaged in occupational duties, does not gain anything. Anything. Can you imagine? A fallen devotee is better than a successful businessman, or president of a country, or any of these people, or a psychiatrist, or psychologist. Or any of these people. A fallen devotee is better. Yes? Yes. How about if he makes offense as he falls down? Then?
Is he still better in a better position?
That's a good question. You say yes, Vanamali. Vanamali is very merciful. He's seeing with the vision of Nityananda, maybe, I don't know. Now, what do you say, Adi Purush? You hesitate.
In Bhagavad Gita, Shantakarati Thakur says that if a person commits
mercy.
Okay, if you make many offenses to the Holy Name, like an angry master, will stop giving you mercy.
But after a long time, after the person regains his faith.
Okay, after some suffering on the offender's part, the name becomes merciful. I would add that the proper consciousness would probably have to be there too. That just like Ajamila, when after he falls down, then he laments. Juva Maharaj, you realize that you've made an offense. But if you just keep on going offending and don't stop, yes.
We have examples,
yes. Vritasura, Gajendra, yes, Gajendra. Atri. Yeah, to Atri Muni. Achha. So then they had to take another birth of suffering, Gajendra and Vritasura, but then they got rectified and they came back. So, yes. Right. And that's the same case with Vritasura, because he was cursed by Parvati. He went back to Godhead very quickly, much quicker than if he had remained a Gandharva or whatever, Vidyadhara, and enjoyed for a long, long time. Instead, he became a demon and very quickly went back to Godhead. Yes, that was the example of reducing someone's karma, how the Lord minimizes the reactions to a devotee's karma. We discussed the other day. In Prabhupada, also in one lecture, New Vrindavan, 1969, he was pointing to us, his disciples, and he said that perhaps in our last lives that we fell down or we neglected our duties to become devotees. We left our ashram, our vanashram duties to become devotees, but then we couldn't do our duties also as devotees. We fell down. So that's why we had birth in non-devotee families. But now, very quickly, we came back to Krishna consciousness. So he said, then he quotes that verse that we said, Chakta Sataramam Charanam Bhujam Re. So this is a lecture on 1.5.7, on that verse actually, 1.5.17 to 18, New Vrindavan 69. Yes. It sounds like an offensive devotee is better than a successful karmi. Madhavendra says, by far. No comparison. His devotee always has protection. His only access is through Maya. He gets kicked enough. Again, many, many births of the same business. And not only that, Srila Prabhupada also said the animals who are like in New Vrindavan, they were also devotees in their last lives. And they also made some mistake. Just like in Vrindavan, we have these hogs, dogs, and monkeys. He said in New Vrindavan, also, they're special. He said they're not ordinary animals. So those animals who come under the protection of devotees, they were also devotees in their last lives. I was reading this book also about animals in Krishna consciousness. And there was one cow named Vishaki. Devotees called her Vishaki. She lived in Malaysia. In Malaysia, Jananda tells a story. And she used to come to the temple, and she would come inside the temple for darshan, and she would stay for class, and she would sit with the Matajis in the back of the temple for class. So she would come very regularly, every day. She would come for class, kirtan, and arti, but she didn't like English class so much. She preferred the local language. So during English class, she would get distracted and sometimes leave. But the other classes, she appreciated more in the local language. And then, especially prasadam, she liked very much. And then the devotees, they changed the temple to it. I mean, they started doing programs at other places. And every time she found out the place and she was there. Even at any location, she would find where they were. And so one time, at the end, she started preaching and she was bringing all the other cows to the temple. So they have pictures of her actually sitting in the back of the temple and then at the end bringing five or six other cows to the temple. So this was a devotee cow called Vishaki. And yeah. 264, the end. That's Bhagavad Gita?
His consciousness.
Okay, the devotee can achieve this consciousness despite being attached to the sensual platform. Non-devotee cannot access. Now, these are good examples. 264. Let's go on. Verse 17. In Bhadravik Ashrama, Dhruva Maharaja's senses became completely purified because he bathed regularly in the crystal clear purified water. He fixed his sitting position and by yogic practice controlled the breathing process and the air of life. In this way, his senses were completely withdrawn. Then he concentrated his mind on the Archa-Vigraha form of the Lord, which is the exact replica of the Lord, and thus meditating upon him, entered into complete trance. So this struck me very much. Prabhupada, in the purport, line, I think, second lines three or four down, he concentrated his mind on the Archa-Vigraha, worshipful deity, which exactly represents the Supreme Lord. Thus, thinking constantly of that deity, he became absorbed in trance. So usually, you know, you hear this process of purified himself, did his breathing process, air of life, and then he meditates on Paramatma in the heart, right? And that was his practice previously, to meditate on Paramatma. But here, he's doing all the same things that a yogi would do, but then he's meditating on the deity. So I found that quite interesting. That here's a yogi, but he's meditating on the deity. He's doing the Ashtanga process. Perfect yogi. So why didn't he just meditate on Paramatma in the heart, which he had done previously in his yoga practice? Why did he meditate on the deity? Anyway, this is Parvati. That's why. His guru told him to make the deity, do the deity worship. So he is following the instructions of his spiritual master up to the end of life. Verse 18. Because of his transcendental bliss, incessant tears flow from his eyes. His heart melted, and there was shivering and standing of the hairs all over his body. Thus transformed in a trance of devotional service, Dhruva Maharaj completely forgot his bodily existence, and thus he immediately became liberated from material bondage. So Prabhupada gives a nice analogy. What is liberation? Paragraph 1, just like a coconut. When you cut it from the coconut tree, it becomes dry. The coconut pulp within separates from the bondage of the shell and the outer covering. And if you shake the coconut, then you'll hear inside the dry coconut. Similarly, when one is fully absorbed in devotional service, he is completely disconnected from the two material coverings, subtle and gross bodies. It must be a very interesting experience to be completely disconnected. Oh, I had that experience, but here you have the experience while you're still in the body. Interesting. End of paragraph 1. Of course, from the beginning of devotional service, a path of liberation immediately opens, just as the coconut taken from the tree immediately begins to dry. It simply takes some time for the shell and pulp to separate from one another. Important word in this verse is mukta linga. Mukta means liberated, and linga means subtle body. When a man dies, he quits the gross body, but the subtle body of mind, intelligence, and ego carries him to a new body. While existing in the present body, the same subtle body carries him from one stage of life to another, isn't it? Do you ever think of it that way? That you're changing bodies. And right, even it's not just at death that you're changing bodies, but right now our subtle body is carrying us from boyhood to youth to old age. We're being carried. If the same thing's happening now is going to happen at death. Transmigration at the end. But there is another stage when one becomes liberated even from the subtle body. At that time, the living entity is competent and fully prepared to be transferred to the transcendental or spiritual world. Verse 19. As soon as the symptoms of his liberation were manifest, he saw a very beautiful airplane coming down from the sky, as if the brilliant full moon were coming down, illuminating all the 10 directions. So this purport is interesting. But since time is short, I won't get into it too much. But Prabhupada describes many different levels of knowledge, direct knowledge, knowledge received from authorities, transcendental knowledge, knowledge beyond the senses, and finally, spiritual knowledge. Then he makes an interesting statement. When one surpasses the stage of acquiring knowledge by the descending process, he immediately is situated on the transcendental platform. Interesting. You can think about that. End of the purport. One can, however, rise to this platform of knowledge by the gradual process of advancing in devotional service or Krishna consciousness. Gradual process. So that's what we're doing. There's hope for us. Verse 20. Tachanu deva pravarav chapter bujhav shamav kisharav varunav vijekshanav sitava vastabhya karam suvasasa kirita harangara charakundalav. Dhruva Maharaj saw two very beautiful associates of Lord Vishnu in the plain. They had four hands and a blackish bodily luster. They were very youthful and their eyes were just like reddish lotus flowers. They held clubs in their hands and they were dressed in very attractive garments with helmets and were decorated with necklaces, bracelets, and earrings. So the thing that struck me, the Sanskrit word kishora, quite young, kishora age. The associates of Vaikuntha, everyone is the age of kishora. Kishore. Yeah, it's young, very young. I think, yeah, 10 to 15, is it? 11 to 15. So even not only in Goloka, but also in Vaikuntha, are the devotees very young. Verse 21. Dhruva Maharaj, seeing that these uncommon personalities were direct servants of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, immediately stood up. But being puzzled in hastiness, he forgot how to receive them in the proper way. Therefore, he simply offered obeisances with folded hands and chanted and glorified the holy names of the Lord. Purport. Chanting of the holy names of the Lord is perfect in every way. When Dhruva Maharaj saw the Vishnu Dutas, the direct associates of Lord Vishnu, four-handed and nicely decorated, he could understand who they were, but for the time being he was puzzled. But simply by chanting the holy name of the Lord, Hare Krishna Mantra, he could satisfy the uncommon guests who had all of a sudden arrived before him. Chanting of the holy name of the Lord is perfect. Even though one does not know how to please Lord Vishnu or his associates, simply by sincerely chanting holy name of the Lord, everything becomes perfect. A devotee, therefore, either in danger or happiness, constantly chants Hare Krishna Mantra. When he is in danger, he is immediately relieved. And when he is in a position to see Lord Vishnu or his associates directly by chanting this Maha Mantra, he can please the Lord. This is the absolute nature of Maha Mantra. Either in danger or in happiness, it can be chanted without difficulty. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he sings that, no? Vihe Thako, Panne Thako, Sadahari. I can sing with this anyway. That, you know, that Vihe Thako, Panne Thako, Sadahari, Bole Thako. And then he says, Suke Duke Bhulo Nako. Forget happiness and stress. Just chant the holy name. Verse 22. Tam Krishna Pada Pinivishta Cheta Sambhatan Shalim Prashayanam Makandam Sunandananda Vupasita Sasvitam Padyuchatu Pushkarana Pasamata. Dhruva Maharaj was always absorbed in thinking of the lotus feet of Lord Krishna. His heart was full with Krishna. When the two confidential servants of the Supreme Lord, who were named Nanda and Sunanda, approached him, smiling happily, Dhruva stood with folded hands, bowing humbly. They then addressed him as follows. So here in the purport, Prabhupada gives the mission of our Krishna consciousness movement. What is that mission? What is our mission? Yes. Yes, being agreeable to the Supreme Lord. Never defy His orders. Samatha. Samatha means to be agreeable. This is in paragraph 2. So Prabhupada says, to bring about this human life, this form of life, is a chance to be trained to be agreeable to the orders of the Supreme Lord. To bring about this training in society is the mission of the Krishna consciousness movement. So that's our mission, to train people to be agreeable to the Supreme Lord, not to defy His orders. So, at the end of the purport, simply by becoming agreeable to the orders of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and by developing love of Godhead, Dhruva got the chance to personally meet the confidential servants of Lord Vishnu face to face. What was possible for Dhruva Maharaj is possible for everyone. Who believes that? Yes. More simple faith on this side. Yes. Okay. Prabhupada says, anyone who very seriously engages in devotional service can obtain in due course of time the same perfection of the human form of life. So we should all do that. And how to do it? Chant 16 rounds, follow 4 regulative principles, as Prabhupada said many, many times, and live in the association of devotees. Then very quickly, we will go back to Godhead. Verse 23. Nanda and Sunanda, the two confidential associates of Lord Vishnu, said, "Dear King, let there be all good fortune unto you. Please attentively hear what we shall say. When you were only 5 years old, you underwent severe austerities, and you thereby greatly satisfied the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We are representatives of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the creator of the whole universe, who carries in his hand the bow named Sharanga. We have been specifically deputed to take you to the spiritual world." So in the prayer part, Prabhupada gives us a promise, so you should believe it. 4 or 5 lines down. This Krishna conscious movement is so potent that by adopting these principles of life and developing love of God, one can very easily go back home, back to Godhead. Here the practical example is the case of Dhruva Maharaj. While the scientist and philosopher go to the moon, but are disappointed in their attempts to stay there and live, the devotee makes an easy journey to other planets and ultimately goes back to Godhead. This is a purport of 25. Devotees have no interest in seeing other planets, but while going back to Godhead, they see all of them as passing phases, just as one who is going to a distant place passes through many small stations. So this is what we have to look forward to. When we go back to Godhead, we can see all those planets. No need to go there. Easy journey to other planets. You see them on the way, but you don't stay. And they can't stay. The scientist probably says they may go, but they cannot stay there. This time he gave him a little credit. Usually he says they didn't go. But this time he says even if they went, they can't stay there. Verse 26. "My dear King Dhruva, neither your forefathers nor anyone else before you ever achieved such a transcendental planet. The planet known as Vishnuloka, where Lord Vishnu personally resides, is the highest of all. It is worshipable by the inhabitants of all other planets within the universe. Please come with us and live there eternally." Purport. When Dhruva Maharaj went to perform austerities, he was very determined to achieve a post never dreamed of by his forefathers. His father was Uttanapa, grandfather Manu, great-grandfather Lord Brahma. So Dhruva wanted a kingdom even greater than Lord Brahma could achieve. And he requested Narada Muni to give him facility for achieving it. The associates of Lord Vishnu reminded him not only his forefathers, but everyone else before him was unable to attain Vishnuloka, the planet where Lord Vishnu resides. Sounds like Dhruva was the first one to go back to Godhead. Sounds like. This is because everyone within this material world is either a karmi, a jnani, or a yogi. But there are hardly any pure devotees. So the end of the purport. By material calculation, traveling at the speed of light, it would take 40,000 light years to reach the topmost planet. By mechanical processes, we are unable to reach the topmost planet of this universe. But the process called Bhakti Yoga is executed by Maharaj Dhruva can give one the facility not only to reach other planets within this universe, but also to reach beyond this universe to the Vishnuloka planets. We have outlined this in our small booklet, Easy Journey to Other Planets. So who is Prabhupada trying to attract here by this purport? Scientists, astronomers, Maya Paritagana, the yogis also. They also want to go to other planets. Yogis and the scientists. But now, from the next purports, he's going to start blasting the scientists. One of his favorite occupations. The Mayavadis and scientists. Verse 27. O immortal one, this unique airplane has been sent by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is worshipped by selected prayers, and who is the chief of all living entities. You are quite worthy to board such plane. So, paragraph 2 of the purport. What are the three kinds of processes for moving in outer space? Yes, Sadi Purush? Ship means airplane-like. Airplane? Pigeons? And Akash Patan. That's a... Patan, what is Patan? It says, as the mind can fly anywhere one likes without mechanical arrangement, so the Akash Patan airplane can fly at the speed of mind. So Akash Patan is an airplane that can fly at the speed of mind. Yes? Flying carpet, yes. That's a lecture on the first in Caracas, 1975. He said in a lecture on the Nigama Kalpa Toror Galitam Phalam, he says in the Vedas there's a description, a science of flying. Again, he said the first one is airship, then there's pigeon, and then he said there's mantra. He said just like this chair, this seat I'm sitting on, if I say a certain mantra, I can make it fly. And there's stories in Hitopadesh or one of those scriptures where witches, they can do that. The witches, they take a tree, they uproot a tree, and they can fly on the tree. These witches. So even in this world, people can do that. They wanted to fly from Earth, they wanted to go fishing. There was one place, another planet that had good fishing. So they got on the tree and they went fishing to another place. Anyway, these things are going on. Prashanta. Oh, yeah? Really? Oh, I don't have that. You have that? Oh, yeah, I know that. Yeah, I know that story. Yeah. Yes. No, Prabhupada.
An exalted person, so
why not Prabhupada told him, like he was, the journalist was interviewing him, and Prabhupada, and he was saying there's three kinds of flying. And he said, and the reporter's there with his notebook. Airplane? Pigeon? Writing down.
And then he asked Prabhupada that,
so why did you fly in the airplane then if you could go by these other means? Prabhupada said, to be one with you. To be one with you. Anyway, yeah, there's another question. One time Prabhupada took airline insurance. He paid for insurance before he went on the flight. And they asked, well, why did, you know, if you know ahead of time it's going to be okay, why do you take this insurance? He said, yeah, I was just being nice to the insurance man. Anyway, Prabhupada was a wonderful person. Yes? Hridayananda Maharaj. In Peru. Up in the Andes Mountains, they were having Harinam. Yeah, I don't know. Black magic in the Andes. Acha. Oh, so in the villages they live there. Oh, you can see them. Witches and wizards, if you're interested. They're antagonistic to the Harinam. Okay. So Sridhar Maharaj was part of the Harinam in Peru in the Andes Mountains. And this is, believe it or not, when he was taking off in the airplane, there were two witches on broomsticks following him.
They were happy.
They were saying farewell. So it's a goodbye party. Goodbye party for Sridhar Maharaj. Happy that he left. How do you know if they were happy? Maybe they were happy. Maybe they liked this kirtan. Who knows?
Well, they were saying that there were
Strange vibrations. Okay. Yeah, people didn't appreciate it. They're into black magic, yes. Quite opposed to Harinam. Okay. So, any other wild stories? No. Verse 28. The great sage Maitreya continued, Maharaj Dhruva was very dear to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When he heard the sweet speeches of the Lord's chief associates in the Vaikuntha planet, he immediately took his sacred bath, dressed himself with suitable ornaments, and performed his daily spiritual duties. Thereafter, he offered his respectful obeisances to the great sages present there and accepted their blessings. I know if it would have been me, I would have said, let me out of here. I would just want to get on that airplane and get out of this world. But Dhruva Maharaj, he was not like that. Prabhupada says, we should mark how dutiful Dhruva Maharaj was in his devotional service. Even at the time he left this material world, he was constantly alert in the performance of devotional duties. Every devotee should take his bath early in the morning and decorate his body with tilak, even if the plane from Vaikuntha is there waiting for you. In Kali Yuga, one can hardly acquire gold or jeweled ornaments, but the 12 tilak marks on the body are sufficient as auspicious decorations to purify the body. And sometimes we don't even do that. We put one or two or four. Since Dhruva Maharaj was living at that time at Bhadrik Ashrama, there were other great sages there. He did not become puffed up because the airplane sent by Lord Vishnu was waiting for him. As a humble Vaishnava, he accepted blessings from all the sages before riding on the plane brought by the chief of the Vaikuntha associates. So what do we learn from this behavior, Dhruva Maharaj? How can we apply this to our lives? Get up, put on tilak. Sankirtan. Keep on doing your duty, whatever success comes. What else? Yeah. We need the blessings of the Vaishnavas. Before we do anything, before we do any wonderful service, we should get the blessings of the Vaishnavas. Before we go on a journey, before we do anything, we get the blessings of the Vaishnavas. So this is a very nice example. See, he's going on a trip. The final journey, as they say. Book of those who leave their bodies, the final journey. He's going on his last journey and he's asking blessings from all the devotees. Srila Prabhupada was like that before he left his body. He begged, please forgive me from all my offenses. So this is very relevant for someone who is about to leave their body, that we have to settle accounts before we leave. Not only settle accounts, get the blessings of the Vaishnavas. Verse 29. Before getting aboard, Dhruva Maharaj worshipped the airplane, circumambulated it, and also offered obeisances to the associates of Vishnu. In the meantime, he became as brilliant and illuminating as molten gold. He was thus completely prepared to board the transcendental plane. So not only did he do all his duties here, then he circumambulated, he worshipped there, he did puja to the plane, he circumambulated the plane, he did so many things before getting on the plane, just imagine. He had presence of mind. Well, if you're in that position, then you've got time. If you're like Dhruva Maharaj. Prabhupada says, so Prabhupada talks about oneness, how when he changed colors, I think, here. His body changed to gold. So this is real oneness. In the second paragraph, Prabhupada says, Mayavadi philosophers cannot imagine how this oneness can be achieved, even in different varieties. Their idea of oneness is that there is no variety. Therefore, they have become impersonalists. As Shishumara, Vishnuloka, or Juvaloka are completely different from this material world, so a Vishnu temple within this world is also completely different from this material world. As soon as we are in a temple, we should know very well we are situated differently from the material world. Prabhupada used to call our temples embassies from the spiritual world. Just like we have our American embassy, if you go there, you feel like you're in America. You go in the other embassies, you feel like there. You're there in that country. So if you go in a temple, you'll feel like you're in Vaikuntha. In the temple, Lord Vishnu, his throne, his room, and all other things associated with the temple are transcendental. The three modes, sattva-gun, raja-gun, tamagun, have no entrance into the temple. It is said, therefore, that to live in the forest is in the mode of goodness. To live in the city is in the mode of passion. To live in a brothel, liquor shop, or slaughterhouse is in the mode of ignorance. To live in the temple means to live in Vaikuntha Loka. Everything in the temple is as worshipable as Lord Vishnu or Krishna. Verse 30. When Dhruva Maharaj was attempting to get on the transcendental plane, he saw death personified approach him. Not caring for death, however, he took advantage of the opportunity to put his feet on the head of death. Thus, he got up on the airplane, which was as big as a house. So you see, death was waiting for him. He didn't have to worry. He wanted to get the dust of Dhruva's lotus feet on his head, Yamaraj. So Prabhupada, in the purport, explains that the passing away of a devotee and a non-devotee is completely different. Dhruva Maharaj took advantage of death's presence and put his feet on the head of death. People with a poor fund of knowledge do not know the difference between the death of a devotee and death of a non-devotee. So here the same analogy, the cat carrying the kitten. When Dhruva Maharaj boarded the airplane, he took advantage of the arrival of death personified, who came to offer him obeisances. Putting his feet on the head of death, he got up on the unique airplane, which is described here to be as big as a house. So then Prabhupada says there are many other examples, like Kardama Muni, who made an airplane as like a big city, carrying many houses, lakes, and gardens. Now he blasts a scientist. Modern scientists have manufactured big airplanes, but they are packed with passengers who experience all sorts of discomforts while riding in them. Now Prabhupada gives his ultimatum to the scientists in the last paragraph. Material scientists are not even perfect in manufacturing a material airplane. In order to compare to the plane used by Kardama or the plane sent from Vishnu Loka, they must manufacture an airplane equipped like a big city with all the comforts of life, lakes, gardens, parks, etc. Their plane must be able to fly in outer space and hover and visit all other planets. If they invent such a plane, they will not have to make different space stations for fuel to travel into outer space. Such a plane would have an unlimited supply of fuel, or, like the plane from Vishnuloka, would fly without it. So here's Prabhupada's ultimatum. You make such an airplane that, like this, yes. It is hard, isn't it? No fuel. Alien identity. That's who? By who? Sariputta. Yes. So this, if you want to find out more about even today, different types of UFOs, airplanes that can move very quickly, very huge ones, you can read the book by Sariputta Das called Alien Identities. Flying ships. Yes, there is. Flying ships. Flying ships. So verse 31. At that time, drums and kettle drums resounded from the sky. The chief Gandharvas began to sing, and other demigods showered flowers like torrents of rain upon Dhruva Maharaj. So we'll stop here. Does anybody have any questions or comments on these verses? Thank you, Tandas. Shishumara, pole star. Yeah, Shishumara is the planetary system of the Lord within this universe. It was described in the second canto, right? Second canto, that the yogi goes Dhruvaloka. Yes, it's the pivot, the central point of Shishumara is the pole star. But it's actually a planetary system within this universe. It's a system, but it's the Lord's system. And there are certain planets that are a part of that, Shishumara. And it's described, it's shaped like a dolphin in the sky. Yes. Well, actually, it's more than a star. It's a whole planetary system. You can look it up in Bhagavatam, I believe, second canto, 2.2.24, and fifth canto also. Yeah, it must be in fifth canto. Shaped like a dolphin, and it's got different stars that are included in that planetary system. Yes? Oh, just see. Dhruva Maharaj married the daughter of Shishumara, Prajapati. So Prajapati Shishumara. He must also live there. So Dhruva Maharaj, there's some relationship there with Shishumara. Planetary system. Okay, any other questions? Or comment? Madhavan Puri. Your question on the second canto? Well, I don't know. Can try. Maybe. Okay, you want to cover this first. Okay, you can be the last question of the day. Anybody else? Sankirtan, you have something more. Yes. He's told to ask him for forgiveness. Oh, no, no, he did go, and he went before him, and we did discuss it quite a bit, that he went there to, in a very humble state of mind, like feeling like an offender, but right at the beginning, Kuvera said, no, you're sinless, because you didn't kill the yakshas, it was time. You didn't kill them. We did discuss that he had and he was hesitating to offer to ask for a benediction. Kuvera was saying to him, "Don't hesitate." Or no, somewhere there it was. He was hesitating. I think it was verse 7. We discussed that. Kuvera was saying, "Without hesitation, you may ask what you want." No, Kuvera immediately said, "Don't worry, don't worry." And he started to. Dhruva didn't get a chance to speak. But obviously from his attitude, he was very repentant. And that's so Kuvera picked up on that. And Kuvera was pleased with him because of his attitude. Yeah, we did discuss a lot yesterday about that. Manangopa. Okay, again, we are reminded. 4.8.72, in comparison to Dhruva Maharaj, we are insignificant. But I think at the end of that purport, 72, he also says the same thing, if you read on. We read it yesterday. Remember that? Yeah, let's look at 4.8.72. I think we read that yesterday.
Yes, it should also be determined to finish our duties.
Oh, I don't have the chapter here. Yeah. We should also be determined to finish our duties in this life, like Dhruva. Yes. Yeah, he said we take the same amount of determination and we can finish in this life. And the process is easier. He mentions that. We talked about that yesterday. You have that verse up in your computer, purport? You read the end of the purport. And Prabhupada will make it applicable for us. Prabhupada always thinks of us. He's very merciful. He doesn't forget us. Yes. See? Same purport, at the end of the purport. We should also be determined to finish our duties in this life. And follow his footsteps, take his determination, finish. And many, many times in these purports he said, this life, this life. And many, many times when Prabhupada was here, he said the same thing. Finish in this life. Don't wait for another life. Don't make me come back again. Yes, Sankirtan.
When you speak about the...
Do they see the airplane?
Because I'm saying that
doesn't say.
Robert explains that Dhruva changed his body.
Yes.
But,
well, Vyasadeva saw it because he's writing the book.
Yeah. No,
And he's up there in Bhadrikashram too. Vyasadeva lives there. Well, it's quite possible that some of those sages also could see it, transcendental vision. Yeah, those who couldn't see must be wondering, what is he doing? Yeah. Yes, Vanamala. Demigods. Demigods can see. Demigods can see, yes. They'll be pouring flowers shortly, next Monday. The demigods will be showering flowers on Dhruva. Yes. Yes, the impersonalists saw a bunch of light. And the yogis saw Paramatma coming. No, actually it was something that looked like Paramatma.
Say his body was like molten gold.
Molten gold, yes. And so were the Vishnu Dutas. They were also, I think, like, yeah.
A lot of light,
yeah. So anybody who was on the level of Brahman would say, wow, see all that light over there. And the personalists could see. Yes. Yes, he was given the vision. Yes, lower vision. Right. But I think the demigods will actually see them going back to Godhead. They will see them, and that's why they're showering. In the case of Prithu, I know the demigods saw how they were up in the airplane at the same time Archie was entering the fire. And then they were both up in the airplane, two airplanes, going back to Godhead. One or two, I don't remember which. But yes, the vision is there. Okay, any other questions on today's verses? And if not, then Madhavendra Puri can ask his question and we'll see what it's about. Oh, Mahama gave a class this morning on 2.1.10. Okay, yeah, I've heard that question before. The question is that if Prabhupada says in the purport, from the beginning of Bhagavatam Jamad Yasyataha up until the end of 12th canto,
yeah.
The last verse.
He leaves in 12th line, he leaves. The 5th chapter of 12th canto, she can then leave his heart.
Okay.
Even before Maharaj Puri, she can leave him.
So, how is it possible that Shukadev spoke from Janmadyasya up until the end, even though in the actual Bhagavatam he doesn't come in until the second canto? Because he can see past, present and future. Why not? So in the beginning it's future, past, what happened before he met Pariksha, and in the end it's future, right? He left, but then this is what happens after he left. So he can also speak these liberated souls, why not? So anyway, we can only speculate, but my mind is full of speculations. The first one was that these liberated souls, they see past, present, and future. And also how he spoke may not be how it's written down also. The author has liberties when he writes, yes. So Prabhupada said he spoke from Janmadyasyataha, means he must have.
Because he heard it also from Janmadyasyataha.
Yes. And then he could have said, in the future, the sages will sit and they will say like this and that and whatever. Because it was spoken before the sages did that. Okay, I mean, there's so many. But it is a writer's thing that he can do like a flashback and flash forward. Mm-hmm. So it's like the first canto is more like a forward or a flashback or whatever. Anyway, Jashuka. So these things are there. How it actually happened, what we know is that he did speak the whole thing according to Srila Prabhupada, since Prabhupada said that. So what are the commentators? Do they say anything about this in 2.1.10? You know? Can look it up. If Prabhupada... That's another way we can research this. What did the commentators say about this? Another point is that Bhagavatam is eternal. and it was already existent before she could have spoken it. See, Hanuman wrote a tikka on it. So it must always start with Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Janmadyase. Yes. Yeah, yes, the short Chaturshloki, and then there's the long Purana. Billions of verses, 1 billion verses, or I don't know how many. Millions of verses. Yeah, it's an expanded Bhagavatam in the heavenly planets. Huge one. Oh, huge commentary, huh? Okay. All right, so by Jiva Goswami. All right, in your spare time, you can look at it and let us know. Shri Goswami doesn't say. Jiva Goswami. So you can, in your spare time, look it up. Any other questions or comments? Okay.
Knowledge,
yes. Kinds of knowledge. I think it's around 15, 19, is it? 12, 19. Different levels of acquired knowledge. Is anybody, you can look that up maybe too. Oh, you have them. Gotcha. Do you know that, Adi Purush? Same. Okay, they correspond. Okay. Where does that come from, you know? Okay, so many places. All right, so that's the different types of knowledge. Acquired knowledge. I think that was Sundarbha, actually, maybe. Tattvasundarbha. Yeah, Tattvasundarbha, I think it's there, all the different types of knowledge. Okay, all glories to Srila Prabhupada.